Okay, good morning, brothers. Today is Friday, May 12th, and we're on study 28 of Return from Babylon. Finishing up our study with the book of Nehemiah. So let's go ahead and turn to Nehemiah. We left off at chapter 2 last time we were together. Chapter 2 of Nehemiah. Take a look at verse 9. I'll go ahead and read. Verse 9 says, "Then I came to the governors of the provinces beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen." Verse 10, "When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite heard about it, it was very displeasing to them that someone had come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel." So, when we looked at the first part of chapter 2 last time we were together, we saw that Nehemiah is getting permission from King Artaxerxes, the emperor of the Persian Empire, to leave Babylon and go back to Jerusalem. So he makes this trip. He's finally made this trip, and he's got these letters of recommendation and protection from the king. And verse 9 says that he comes to the governors of the provinces. So he's kind of making stops along the way before he gets to Jerusalem and letting people know, hey, I'm going to be in Jerusalem. Here's what I'm going to be up to, and here's my bona fides. Here's my approval from the king. And these guys, like Sanballat, Tobiah, they're not too happy about it. In fact, Tobiah is known as an Ammonite. So you've got these long-time, millennial, ancestral enemies of Israel. They're still in the land. They still don't want Israel to be in the land. They still want to expel Israel from the land. It's the same type of problems Ezra had been running up against. And these guys basically we're told in the scripture that they are very, very upset and they're very threatened by the fact that someone's coming, especially from the capital, to protect or to somehow support Israel. Let's take a look at this next portion. Could someone read verses 11 through 16?
"So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I arose in the night, and a few men with me. I did not tell anyone what my God was putting into my mind to do for Jerusalem, and there was no animal with me except the animal of which I was riding. So I went out at night by the valley gate in the direction of the dragon's well and on the refuse gate, inspecting the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were consumed by fire. Then I passed on to the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was no place for my mount to pass. So I went up at night by the ravine and inspected the wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done, nor had I yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who did the work."
Okay, great. Thanks, Liz. What I want to do now is I want to pass out a map that we'll talk about. And I'll email one to Paul, too, so he can post it. Tim, here's a map. If you want, we'll take a look at this. So what you have here we're looking at, if you look at it, landscape. The heading of this map is Jerusalem Rebuilt Under Ezra and Nehemiah. And so we're looking at it as if we're on the east facing west. So really, if it was a north-south map, we'd turn it up like this. But just to make it easier for us to follow, we'll put it landscape. And
where's the door that begins?
We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. So right now, as we look at the Mount Zion, And we would be looking at it right now from the vantage point of the Mount of Olives. You'll see the Temple Mount on the far right-hand side. It will be the northernmost side of the Mount Zion or Mount Moriah. And you can see around this, these would be the walls that had been built around Jerusalem before or by Solomon. And these are the walls and the gates that had been, that Nehemiah was very upset about, the fact that the walls had been broken down and the gates had been burned with fire by the Babylonians. So if you take a look on the far left side of this map, you go down from top to bottom, you'll see there's a little portion, there's a box that says construction stages.
Okay.
And you'll see in the first column, it says overseer. And under overseer, the first person there is Ezra. And then if you go over to the next column, it says focus, altar, date, 536 BC, duration, a few days. If you can recall, when we read Ezra, chapters 1 and 2 and 3, that was all about Ezra coming, Ezra and Zerubbabel, about 50 years before, almost 100 years before Nehemiah, coming to Babylon, leaving Babylon, coming back to the land for the first time, and rebuilding the altar. And that only took a few days to get the altar up and running. The temple, as we read in Ezra, took another 20 years. And it took another 20 years because 15 of those years, these enemies in the land had gone against them, had started attacking them, and so people got freaked out, so they just stopped building for 15 years. These prophets arose in the land, a guy named Haggai and a guy named Zechariah, that said, the God of Israel wants you to get back to building this altar, and this temple, and they finished. So the second temple was finished. It took 20 years, though, with a 15-year delay, and it was finished in 516 B.C. So what we're going to be looking at now is the next row, Nehemiah, focus the walls, time period 445 B.C., and we're going to be reading now about the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem. And we're going to see this project takes about almost 2 months, 52 days. What we're also going to see is, as we read, specifically not so much in chapter 2, but as we get to chapter 3, we're going to see how this construction project rotated around these walls and how everyone in Jerusalem participated to get the walls rebuilt. That's why the Lord, remember, the Lord put this on Nehemiah's mind. Nehemiah brought it to King Artaxerxes, afraid that the king was going to tear him down. The king said, no, go what you're supposed to do. And so this is the project that the Lord sends Nehemiah to get done. Now, if you were to compare these walls to the old walls around Jerusalem today, they're much different. So I'm going to raise this. A much smaller scope of protection. So you have the Temple Mount here. These walls, as you see, kind of go north to south like this. And this would have been the area of David's ancient palace, King David's ancient palace. This is the Mount of Olives here. And now, the wall, so now if you go to Jerusalem, what's called the old walls of Jerusalem are much bigger. They encompass much more of the city. They kind of come around like this, and come around like this, and go like that. So now if you go to Jerusalem, the walls that were built in the Crusader period are much, and this is what's called the old city of Jerusalem. Time period we're looking at, it's even was a much smaller geography. So, and these are the walls that Nehemiah was called to have Jerusalem and have Israel rebuild. So the verse that, come back to these verses that Lou read, verse 11 says, so I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. So the idea here is Nehemiah gets in there, introduces himself to the folks, kind of gets there, lets them know that he's not a, probably not an enemy, that he's on their side, that he's a big shot in the Jewish community in Israel. He's there to help. He's also sent by the king. So then you have in verse 12, and I arose in the night. So after 3 days, he gets up at night. I and a few men with me, because I did not tell anyone what my God was putting in my mind to do for Jerusalem. So the idea is when he gets there, he doesn't tell anyone, apparently, that the reason he's there is because God had given him this vision to rebuild the wall. So it seems to be that the text tells us that no one really understands why he's there. So he's getting up in the middle of night now to do a reconnaissance mission. What kind of project am I looking at? So you got here in verse 12, and there was no animal with me except the animal on which I was riding. And
yeah.
So the idea here. Well, let me ask you a question. And it's not obvious, but what were horses used for back in the day?
Horses.
Chariots? Yeah, what are chariots used for?
War. Battle.
Yeah. There's a movie, World War One movie, it's a great movie called War Horse. why do you think he's going? Let me ask you this. This question might help you understand the other issue. Why is he doing this at night?
You know anybody see?
Yeah, especially who?
The Jews.
Well, and especially, there's a lot of enemies still.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, these guys don't. You know, so he already knows that he's going to have resistance, especially from these people groups that have continually been against them. So he's just trying to keep this low key. And so he's going out at night because he doesn't want to make a production. And if you have horses, it's going to be provocative, possibly. Gotcha. These other people are like, oh, my gosh, we've really got to tear these people down because it's a way not to provoke your enemies, likely. So there's one horse that he's on, but none of these other guys, this few entourage that he has to help him mount this reconnaissance mission are on horses. So the idea is to keep this low-key, a quiet, kind of top-secret mission. And verse 13 says, so I went out how did he go out? Which way did he go out in verse 13? The Valley Gate. So take a look at your map and let me know if you can find the Valley Gate.
It's right next to the Eastern Hill.
Yes, that's exactly right. So as you look at the map from a landscape perspective, it's at the top, it's the westernmost wall towards the bottom, towards the south, and he goes out, Nehemiah goes out this gate at night, top secret mission. Coming back to verse 13, so I went out by the Valley Gate in the direction of the Dragon's Well and onto the Refuse Gate. Now, this map doesn't call it a refuse gate, but is there a gate that you can see on this map that sounds kind of like a refuse gate? A dung gate, yeah, literally a poopy gate. So what Nehemiah is doing, he comes out and he goes south towards this dung gate. It's called the dung gate because you think of all of the slaughter. And by the way, topographically, the Temple Mount is up here, and the dung gate is topographically lower. So all of the sewage of all of the blood and all of the refuse that's going on in the temple circle comes down and flows out through the dung gate. So this is where Nehemiah is going in this secret midnight mission.
Pretty long flow for the Temple Mount.
It is. Yeah, it's a hike if you ever hiked it. It's not hard to do. So verse 13, I went out by the Valley Gate in the direction of the Dragon's Well onto the Refuse Gate, inspecting the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down. So this yellow line representing walls are just all tore up. There's no protection around ancient Jerusalem. And the text goes on and says, and its gates, which were consumed by fire. So the idea is people just walk in and out of these gates because they're not operating as protection anymore.
So the framework was still existing, though.
Yeah, probably like an arch, but you know, most of it's probably torn down and no way to open or close gates. Verse 14. Then I passed on to the fountain gate. So if you see at the south end of this map, if you're looking at it, it'd be the far left. So he's coming up back north, the fountain gate, and that this map calls it the Pool of Shelah, the very southern end. It's also called the Pool of Siloam. It's there today. It's just been found. Archaeologists have just discovered it in the last 20 years. And last time, Jeff Gibson and I and James McVeigh were in Jerusalem in 2014. We went to the Pool of Siloam. That's where Jesus healed the blind man. And so Nehemiah's coming around from the southern end. Verse 15. So I went up by night by the ravine and inspected the wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. So the idea is he comes around, checks out the south, and then he goes back around where he came and goes back into the valley gate. And he's just, again, he's getting a quick look at what is this project going to undertake? What's it going to be like? Verse 15 goes on. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. Verse 16, the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done, nor had I as yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who did the work. So the idea is that he hasn't told anyone because he wants to keep it quiet. And you think, well, why didn't he at least tell the Jewish people? Well, let me ask you this. You know all this weird information we're finding out about the Trump administration, and most of it's questionable. Where's the source supposedly coming from this information?
Inside somewhere.
White House leaks, yeah. And so the idea, it's same as it is thousands of years ago. People leak. And so if you want to keep stuff quiet, you don't even tell your friends even because people leak. You just never know who can be trusted. And some people thought that's why they can't be trusted. They just don't have good discretion. My mom is a great example of that. You can't tell her anything. I love her to death. She's a good Christian. But if you tell her, keep this secret, the world will know tomorrow. Yeah. So he doesn't want to tell anyone, okay? Let's take a look at this next portion of Scripture. Could someone read verses 17 through 20 of chapter 2?
And I said to them, you see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates firm. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer suffer derision. And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, what is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Then I replied to them, the God of heaven will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem.
Okay, great. Thanks, Richard. So, verse 17. Now that he's done this midnight mission, he's come back, he's gathered leadership, and he now tells them. Then I said to them, and here's what he says, you guys see the bad situation we're in here? Jerusalem is desolate. So, yeah, the temple's running, but if you look around, the place is still destroyed. Jerusalem is desolate, and its gates burned by fire. Now here comes his appeal. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach. Now, what Nehemiah says here is interesting in that one of the reasons, maybe even the primary reason, to rebuild these walls and these gates is not so much necessarily to be military protection for the temple. I mean, there's definitely some attributes. There's no doubt about it. There's some reason for that. But it's probably not the primary reason, because if that were the primary reason, Artaxerxes probably wouldn't have been comfortable with this. You know, it's still not going to be strong enough to withhold an onslaught of the Persian army. But he reveals why, probably the primary reason, so that we will no longer be a reproach. The idea here is the reputation of Israel is that these people are still dogs.
It's a dump up there.
It's a dump. Yeah. These guys can't even get it together to build a stupid wall. Who's their god? Oh, yeah, I got this stupid temple. But this place is a dump. It's a backwater. And so Nehemiah's appeal, and this is based on God's direction, is let's start to hold our head up high. And let's start to demonstrate that our God is a God that is worthy of service, worthy of respect, and his temple is worthy of protection. So the idea here is start to rebuild a national identity almost for Israel, which has been cast into the nations, mostly into Babylon. So you got here in verse 6, 18, I told them how the hand of my God, now he reveals to them why he's there. I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words, which he'd spoken to me. Then they said, let us arise and build. So they put their hands to the good work. So now they're like, yeah, we're on board, Nehemiah. This is awesome. We agree. You're telling us God sent you. We believe it. You're telling us the king approved it. This is excellent. Let's get busy. So that's good news. Verse 19. But Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite, so we heard about those guys earlier in chapter 2, and now we got a new character, Geshem the Arab, heard it. They mocked us and despised us. Now, interestingly, you got the Ammonite mentioned, who's a historical enemy of Israel, but now you have a new character on the scene, Geshem. And what's his nationality?
Arab.
He's Arab. Yeah, he's a descendant of Ishmael. So, again, when you think about the Middle East conflict, you know, it's biblical. It goes back,
absolutely,
you know, millennia. And here you have, you know, just the two-state solution isn't something new. People have been trying this for thousands of years. And so we're reading about, you know, someone trying to have a – but it's never going to be solved until Israel gets back the land that Yahweh gave to her. Because the enemies of Israel will continue to hate her. Just life. And so these guys hate Israel. They mock them, despise them, and they ask them, what are you doing? And they accuse them, you're rebelling against the king. They want to derive all kinds of negative accusations about what they're doing in order to stop what they're doing. And how does Nehemiah answer these jokers in verse 20?
They put him down.
Yeah. Not only does he say, our God is going to give us success, but he says, you're not going to have a part of it.
Exactly.
You're excluded from this. So this is no kumbaya, let everyone get together and hold hands. He's saying, Israel, this is our land. This is our city. You don't need to be part of this. You're a threat anyways. You may pretend to be part of us. By the way, a major tenet of Islam, and again, this is way before Islam even existed, is it's okay to get what you want. It's okay to lie to get what you want. So that's why peace treaties with Muslim countries are always suspect, because it may just be a way for them to attack you, because that's the teaching of Muhammad. So, but even before Islam existed, you couldn't trust these people, is what Nehemiah is basically getting at. And that moves us to Nehemiah chapter 3. And at Nehemiah chapter 3, since there are many weird names here, I'll go ahead and read verses 1 through 11. Verse 1. Then Eliashib, the high priest, arose with his brothers, the priests, and built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and hung its doors. They consecrated the wall to the tower of the hundred, and the tower to Hananel, verse 2. Next to him, the men of Jericho built. And next to them, Zakur, the son of Imri, built. Verse 3. Now the sons of Hesenaha built the fish gate. They laid its beams and hung its doors with its bolts and bars. Verse 4. Next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakos, made repairs. And next to him, Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabel, made repairs. And next to him, Zadok, the son of Bana, also made repairs. Verse 5. Next to him, the Taakites made repairs, but their nobles didn't support the work of their masters. Verse 6. Joida, the son of Paseah, and Meshulam, the son of Besodeah, repaired the old gate. They laid its beams and hung its doors with bolts and its bars. Verse 7. Next to them, Melatiah, the Gibeonite, and Jadon, the Merinthite, the men of Gibeah and of Mizpah, also made repairs for the official seat of the governor and of the province beyond the river. Verse 8. Next to him, Uziel, the son of Harhiah, of the goldsmiths, made repairs. And next to him, Hananiah, one of the perfumers, made repairs. And they restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. Verse 9. Next to them, Rephaiah, the son of Hur, the official of half the district of Jerusalem, made repairs. Verse 10. Next to them, Jediah, the son of Horammath, made repairs opposite his house. And next to him, Hattish, the son of Hashabneah, made repairs. In verse 11. Malchijah, the son of Harim, and Hashub, the son of Pahath Moab, repaired another section and the Tower of Furnaces. So what I want you to do is take a look at your map, and you can see that this chapter literally is going to bring us counterclockwise around Jerusalem, and you'll see that how all of these families that lived within the city joined in, and they did their share of the work to build the share of the wall where their homes were adjacent to. You've got in verse 1. It starts with the high priest. This guy, Eliashib, the high priest, arose with his brothers who are priests and built the sheep gate. Now, on your map, can anyone tell me where the sheep gate is at?
Yeah.
Where's it at?
Right
on the north side. Right, and it's logical. The high priest would live probably right there in the city next to the temple. And under the sheep gate, you can see you've got a citation, Nehemiah 3:1. So, also in verse 1, they consecrated and hung its doors. So these guys said, let's do this. And so they, Richard, they actually put the framework for the door together, get the bolts, get everything together. So this thing now will open and close. It'll be protective. They consecrate it. And then verse 1 says, they consecrated the wall to the Tower of the Hundred and the Tower of Hanal. So you can see exactly west on the wall. Now we're going to be going counterclockwise. These guys took over the responsibility to not only fix the sheep gate, but fix the tower to the west and fix the other tower, defensive tower. So those guys did that. Check out verse 2. Next to him, the men of Jericho built. So now you've got that corner where the fish gate is at. Men of Jericho are Jews that had been in Jericho at one time. Now they're in Jerusalem. They're living there now. And so this family of Israel is now taking responsibility to rebuild this part of the wall. And verse 3, the sons of Hesenai built the fish gate. So we're going counterclockwise. And you see all these families making these repairs. Let's drop down to
Chris.
Yes, sir.
Real quick.
Yeah.
The gate of Ephraim, I see that's done in chapter 8. So that particular part of the wall was not done when all these other ones were being done.
Yeah, it might not necessarily be that it's not done, Lou, but it might be we'll see a reference to that gate when we get to chapter 8. Let me ask you, just make sure I'm answering your question correctly.
Okay.
Where are you looking at here?
You see where the broad wall is? Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 8.
Hold on 1 second here.
Read
it up, please. Yes. Okay. So I don't, we'll get to that, Lou. I don't think it means that that gate wasn't finished. We'll just see later on. We're going to see an allusion to this gate being made. And actually, you can take a look at the bottom of this map, other landmarks, the house of Jedidiah, Nehemiah 3:10, tombs of David, Nehemiah 3:16. So you can see the references being made here. Let me point out another one here. Well, Broadwell, Lou just mentioned that. Verse 8, next to him, Uzziah, the son of Harani, the goldsmith, made repairs. Then it goes on, and next to him, Hananiah, one of the perfumers, made repairs, and they restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. So there you go, Nehemiah 3:8.
Gotcha.
These guys get that portion restored. And if you jump down to verse 11, the Tower of Ovens gets restored by verse 11. Okay, now as an act of love, I'm going to read the rest of the chapter. So, and this is not the most interesting stuff, but it's history, and it's recording the return of Israel.
What's cool about it? Each family
took responsibility.
Each family took their sections because of pride, and they said, you know what? Let's do this right.
Amen.
And I like that.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
But again, by connecting the blood together, you had good continuity because each family trusted themselves, and then those families trusted the next family next to them. So you really built a human bond of activity, yeah, rather than having to build everything anywhere.
So check out verse 12. Next to him, Shalom, the son of Halohesh, the official of the half district of Jerusalem, made repairs. He and his daughters. So even the women weren't. It's kind of like the if you go to Israel today, you know, it's not just the guys with the military outfits. I mean, you see these Britney Spears-looking girls that are 17 with these big old M16s walking around. Yeah. So everyone's got a job to do.
Yeah, my wife, when we first went over there, they had to go to the bathroom. They all go in the bathroom. And there, you know, you've got the counter where the sinks are. And on the counter are all these Uzis. And they go in there. This is in the woman's bathroom.
The women are... They waited to put their lipstick and put the Uzi on the thing. Yeah. Verse 13, Haun and the inhabitants of Zaniah repaired the valley gate. So take a look at your map here. The valley gate, again, we're moving counterclockwise, so that gets repaired. They built it and hung its doors with its bolts and bars, 1,000 cubits of the wall to the refuse gate. So then you see down in the dung gate at the bottom. Verse 14, Micaiah, the son of Rechab, the official of the district of Beth Hekarim, repaired the dung gate or the refuse gate. He built it, hung its doors with its bolts and bars, so that gate gets repaired now. Verse 15, Shalom, the son of Kolhoz, the official of the district of Mizpah, repaired the fountain gate. So now at the south here, you see this gate repaired. He built it, covered it, hung its doors with bolts and bars. In the wall of the pool of Shelah, or the pool of Siloam in the New Testament, the king's garden as far as the steps that descend from the city of David. Again, that southern part was where David lived. That's where his ancient palace was. Verse 16. After him, Nehemiah. Now this, believe it or not, there's three Nehemiahs mentioned in the book of Nehemiah. Two of them are not the guy. This is just a guy named Nehemiah. This is not Nehemiah from who'd come from Babylon. This is another Nehemiah. After him, Nehemiah, the son of Azbuk, official half district of Bethzor, made repairs as far as a point opposite the tombs of David. And as far as the artificial pool in the house of the mighty men, verse 17, after him, the Levites carried out repairs under Rehum, the son of Benai. Next to him, Heshbiah, the official of half the district of Keilah, carried out repairs for his district. 18 after him, their brothers carried out repairs under Babai, the son of Henadad, the official of the other half of the district of Keilah. Verse 19, next to him, Ezer, the son of Jeshua, the official of Mizpah, repaired another section in front of the ascent of the armory at the angle. Verse 20, after him, Baruch, the son of Zabai, zealously repaired another section from the angle to the doorway of the house of Elashib, the high priest. Verse 21, after him, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakos, repaired another section from the doorway of Eliashib's house. even as far as the end of his house. And verse 22, after him, the priests, the men of the valley carried out repairs. Verse 23, after them, Benjamin and Heshbub carried out repairs in front of their house. After them, Azariah, the son of Messiah, the son of Menaniah, carried out repairs besides his house. So in an effort to get this whole chapter done before the end of the hour, let's continue on. Verse 24. After him, Benua, the son of Henadad, repaired another section from the house of Azariah as far as the angle and as far as the corner. 25. Palal, the son of Uzziah, made repairs in front of the angle and the tower projecting from the upper house of the king. And you can see here on the map, the bottom on the eastern side, it's called Projecting Tower. Mentioned here in Nehemiah chapter 3, verses 25 to 27. Verse 26, the temple servants living in Ophel made repairs as far as the front of the water gate towards the east and projecting tower. Verse 27, after them, the Taochites repaired another section in front of the great projecting tower as far as the wall of Ophel. 28, and above the horse gate, the priests carry out repairs, each in front of his house. 29, after them, Zadok, the son of Immer, carried out repairs in front of his house. And after him, Shemaiah, the son of Shechaniah, the keeper of the east gate, carried out repairs. So you see the east gate here now at the bottom of the map.
Yep.
Verse 30. After him, Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanun, the sixth son of Zaleph, repaired another section. After him, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, carried out repairs in front of his own quarters. Verse 31. After him, Malchijah, one of the goldsmiths, carried out repairs as far as the house of the temple servants and of the merchants in front of the inspection gate, and as far as the upper room of the corner, verse 32, between the upper room of the corner and the sheep gate, the goldsmiths and the merchants carried out repairs. And there you go. You have it, and basically it's a, we'll see later where we get the timing, but it's a 52-day job.
Yeah.
And in that 52-day period, not too long after Nehemiah gets there, they assess the work, they agree they're going to get it done. And they, like the night commercial says, they just do it. They don't complain. They don't ask, say, Bill's supposed to do it. Sam's supposed to do it. The pastor's supposed to do it. No, wait, the staff's supposed to do it. They do it.
That's fair.
It's just going to be a really stupid question about that. What were all the tribes involved in this, or was there a particular tribe?
So that's a really, really good question. It's not a stupid question at all. As you can see how boring this is. People read ahead and they said, I'm not coming to this class. We've got six people here. Five. So Billy, I'm not coming. I don't want to get called on to read this stuff. So if we wanted to make it really boring, we could probably research each of these names and try to find out biblically from Chronicles and Kings which tribes they're from. So suffice it to say, these are mostly going to be descendants of the tribe of Judah, Levi, and Benjamin.
Gotcha.
That would be natural because it's the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom was the other 10 tribes. The southern kingdom was Judah and Benjamin. They're the southern kingdom, and David is the king of Judah. He was a descendant of Judah, so is Jesus. So the southern kingdom is the kingdom that survived the Assyrian captivity, and the southern kingdom, Benjamin mostly, Judah and some Levites, got taken out by the Babylonians when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem in 586. Having said that, Lou, when these deportations occurred by the Assyrians of the northern 10 tribes and by the Babylonians of the southern 2 tribes, they didn't take everyone out of the land.
Right.
They just took the people with money and the people with knowledge.
Gotcha.
Folks called the Amharats, the people of the land, the farmers, petty merchants, they let stay there. So you probably can find other, like Asher, Naphtali, you probably can find a few folks in here, but they're going to be a minority.
Okay. Sure. Where do they go? They go all around the world. Yeah. And And those people don't know where they go. They go to
they go to synagogue.
A synagogue. I mean, no, but a synagogue. Not a synagogue.
Go to, well, why would they go to a synagogue?
Well, because that's where the Jews are. All
that's the law of Messiah. Take a look at Romans chapter 1. Let's see what the law of Messiah says. Romans chapter 1. Bill, could you read verse 16 when you get there?
Romans chapter
16.
1:16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek.
So in the law of Messiah, who is the, in any kind of missionary work that's undertaken, who gets the top priority?
The Jew.
Right. Yeah, so you just naturally start at the synagogue.
But also, and also it was too, it was a place where Paul was welcome because he was a priest moving.
But he wasn't a priest.
But he was moving to being one.
He was a Pharisee.
Pharisee. He moved to be a Pharisee. So therefore, everybody came in and they wanted to see him.
And wanted to talk to him.
He came in. The people there said, some of this makes sense. They didn't have a believer. The rest of them said, this guy's a heretic. And they get him out of the hotel and go to home church after that.
Yeah. So especially the Jewish folks in Berea. They become believers. Do you remember in Acts why the Jewish folks in Berea become believers? They searched the scriptures. They didn't believe what their family told them.